is my first lie that I have no relationships to disclose. Okay, good afternoon. The title of my presentation is I felt for a long time like everything beautiful in me had been taken out. Women suffering, remembering, health and survival following the loss of child custody. And I want to thank faculty at UNC School of Public Health who have offered a lot of support and guidance around this research. I'd also like to thank Toronto Women's College Hospital Research Institute, and specifically the Health Equity Fellowship, who provided financial support for this study. And I just want to begin by positioning myself a little bit in this research by acknowledging the courageous women who formed the Grief and Loss Education and Action Project in Toronto. This is a bereavement and social action initiative organized by women drug users who have experienced child custody loss. And I worked closely with this group of women for a number of years in the formation of this project and its organization. And through this experience have gained somewhat of an insider-outsider status, having privileged access, or gained privileged access to knowledge from these women who have experienced this form of loss. And this has greatly informed the conceptual roots for my analysis that I'm going to share with you today. So I just wanted to do an overview of my presentation. I'm going to provide a bit of context on the issue of women in child custody loss. I'm going to go over my study aims and methods and my theoretical framework. And I'm also going to share results and then discuss some of the key findings from my study. So just to contextualize the issue of women in child custody loss, and the state removal of children from parents disproportionately impacts the marginalized. So in the U.S. context, as some of you may know, African-American children represent 15% of the general population and 30% of children in the care of the child welfare system. In Canada, Indigenous children, who represent a very small percentage of the general population, 4.3%, represent over 50% of children who are currently in care in Canada. So I think when we think about who's affected, the natural inclination and dominant response has been to address the impacts of family separation on children, which is very important. No research, however, has looked at the impacts of forced family separation on communities, as well as impacts on parents, and specifically mothers who tend to be the primary caregivers of children and who are involved in the child welfare system. And interestingly, these same women are also widely cited in public health literature as being structurally disadvantaged and vulnerable to poor health. And by that, I mean that women who tend to be involved and intersect with the child welfare system tend to be women who are involved with the criminal justice system also, as well as women who are homeless, women who are survivors of violence, and racialized women, among others. So no studies thus far have looked at the long-term impacts of this experience on women, and there's been a few cross-sectional studies that have documented a range of effects, including grief, depression, social isolation, and stigma. And in terms of women drug users, who, as some of you may know, substance use is a very commonly a common predictor of child custody loss and contributes to an estimated of 75% of children are in the child welfare system as a result of parental drug use. And there's been limited qualitative research, and by limited I mean like a handful of studies that have shown that child custody loss greatly increases the use of drugs and alcohol among the parents and specifically women. However, longer term impacts on the health and social trajectories of these women has not yet been looked at, and that's a strong interest of mine for my dissertation work. So what I'm going to talk to you about today is a qualitative study that aimed to understand the health and social impacts of child custody loss on women's lives. So I interviewed 19 women aged 18 to 62 who had experienced this form of loss of one or more children. All of the women identified as drug using, and 95% of the women lived in poverty, 42% identified as racialized, either black or indigenous, and 89% of the women had experienced permanent termination of parental rights. And interestingly, 26% of the women who were part of the study had they themselves been involved in the child welfare system as children. So you can sort of see the cyclical nature of how this system can operate. And the data collection for the study took place in Toronto from June to August 2013. All of the in-depth interviews were audio recorded and essentially focused on three major threads of inquiry. The first being, what were barriers to you retaining care of your children? What have been the impacts of this form of separation? And how have you survived this experience? So this slide shows the different steps of my data analysis process that I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I'm happy to answer questions afterwards. And one of the points I just want to highlight is that in interviews with women, they provided really rich descriptions of this experience. So thematic narrative analysis was used as the overarching approach to the analytic process, and this allowed narrative and women's narrative to really drive the process rather than having more of a code-driven or a theme-driven analysis. So moving on to my theoretical framework. To describe the theoretical framework informing my analysis, I want to begin by saying that there are many competing frames of understanding the positions of women who lose custody of their children, and many of these negatively portray women as deviant and irresponsible for transgressing dominant mothering norms of caretaking and selflessness. And I didn't want to perpetuate this frame of understanding and wanted to contribute to building an alternative narrative. So in trying to do that, I really was seeking different theoretical ways of sort of positioning how I wanted to think about women's stories that they were sharing with me, and which extensively described emotional and mental health impacts of their losses. So I found theory really helpful in supporting me to think differently about this and to focus on women's emotions, not only as things that are internal to them, but are also social processes. And two theoretical concepts were particularly helpful in doing this. The first is the concept of social suffering that brings an analytic lens to suffering that looks at the inseparability of this form of loss with other forms of violence, including structural violence, symbolic violence, and interpersonal violence, which all can combine to give rise to this event of child custody loss and also mediate its impacts on women's lives. And the second concept that was really helpful was that of emotional habitus, which brings attention to social forces that are at play in designing what people feel emotionally and also what people understand of what they are feeling, and more specifically how power relations can be exercised and reproduced in people's feelings. And both of these concepts, social suffering I'd heard of before, emotional habitus was new to me, and I found it really helpful in understanding what I was seeing in the data. And I think this concept counters the idea that feelings, again, are wholly interior to the person and constructs rather feelings and emotions as located within a web of social relations. So just before I move on to discuss study results, I want to underscore how both of these concepts of social suffering and emotional habitus really challenged me in my analysis of the data to move beyond sort of fragmenting women's experiences into lists of disorders and behaviors, and to look more holistically and think more critically in connecting the dots between how sort of the genesis and the genealogy of this form of loss, as well as the mediating forces shaping its consequences on women's health and social well-being, and also the social processes through which like lived emotions and feelings relating to this form of loss can be ontologically designed. So these, they're very helpful. So moving on to the results, participants described the event of child custody loss as a significant traumatic event producing long-lasting impacts on their everyday lives. And women's trauma assembled across four main themes that I'm going to touch on in the results. Separation, how children were removed from parents. Suffering, how women described the different dimensions of their suffering. forgetting and remembrance, which sort of covers how women describe their coping from this experience, and also survival, how women had survived up until now. So in terms of, on the theme of separation, women's narratives describe the ways in which events of parent-child separation were orchestrated by child welfare as being often irreconcilable, and the origins of trauma for many of the women that I interviewed. And subsequently, the custody arrangements, including the quality and frequency of visits with children, also played a central role in both strengthening or weakening women's experience of trauma severity. And I have a quote by one of the women in the study, Chantel, who shows how the event of separation itself really impacted her. And in this case, this is a quote about her second daughter, who was born and removed very soon after birth under sort of misleading circumstances, where she was told that the child was going to be taken for needles, and then the child wasn't returned to her. And this moment was really pivotal in sort of her future relationships with child welfare, and she referred to it many times in the interview as sort of a very critical juncture for her. So she writes, "With my first daughter, it hurt, but like it wasn't as bad because I got to see her. They still let me see her in the nursery, and then with my second, they basically lied to me. They told me they were taking my daughter for needles, and then Child Protective Services came in, and then I never saw her. And like, I seen my daughter for an hour, and they wouldn't even let me see her in the nursery. And after that, I had to wait. That's what killed me the most. So I don't know. I lost all energy, everything. Just gave up." So moving to women's description of this form of suffering, women talked about this as changing little over time, as feeling frequently unbearable and affecting their day-to-day function of caring for themselves and also forming ambitions related to employment and education and a sense of future. Only a few women, interestingly, mentioned the condition of post-traumatic stress disorder. However, all of them spoke about pervasive symptoms of the disorder as being caused by their experience of separation from their children. And they talked about recurring nightmares of this specific event and how it happened when their child was removed from them. They also spoke about avoiding triggers of memories of this event and practices of dissociation and numbing. So also there are other related mental health conditions that women spoke about with regard to separation from their children. And they talked about depression, suicide ideation, anxiety, and bipolarity as being dimensions of their suffering related to this event. So forgetting, and the word forgetting, was a commonly articulated goal endeavored toward in women's attempts to numb the suffering of separation. Self-medicating with drugs and alcohol was an almost universal response that was elevated early on and became often more habitual over time as a means of distracting and numbing. And attempts to forget also synergistically intensified alongside women's increased vulnerability, and this included increased HIV-related risk observed in loss of housing that occurred in the aftermath of separation, lost partners, intimate partner violence, initiation of injection drug use, and entry or reentry into sex work. And I have a quote from Kyla, who describes her attempts to numb and to cope with the aftermath of her children being removed from her care. And I just want to read that. I was trying to numb and forget what I couldn't forget. I couldn't forget my kids were gone, and I couldn't, you know, forget that they took my kids away from me, and I just tried so hard to numb those feelings that couldn't be numbed. There's no way, no drug or no drink that can make that feeling go away, ever. So the last part of my interviews with women, I asked them how they had survived this experience. And for many women, survival hinged on hopefulness of reuniting with their adult children. This was a central point of influence in their day-to-day intentions toward wanting to improve the conditions of their life and ameliorate their own their personal circumstances. Other women, and this is a minority of women, felt they had not survived and that they were just sort of here, but not didn't feel like they had survived this experience. Survival was also helped for some women by finding ways of remembering children, and there's a lot of examples of that, of wrapping gifts for children and writing birthday cards and keeping all of those gifts and giving them to their children when they were older, and that was a way that gave women meaning around this experience and helped them sort of on a more day-to-day basis. And survival in terms of reproductive agency was often expressed as compromised due to fear of re-traumatization. What I mean by that is women fearing becoming pregnant and this potentially recurring again, and therefore feeling like they can't become pregnant and they can't become parents. And two of the women in the study had disclosed having abortions as a result of this fear. This last quote by Sasha speaks to the need that was also talked about in terms of survival around women having access to each other and women finding meaning in being together with other women who had had this experience, which was very rare for the participants that I interviewed, with the exception of Sasha. So Sasha says, I would like to see moms have greater access to each other because I think the way the system is set up from many different perspectives is really individualized. So you're meant to feel like you're the only one this has ever happened to and there's something wrong with you and what you did. And women really internalize all of that crap. So lastly, drawing on the theories mentioned earlier as an interpretive frame for thinking about these results, I want to end with just a brief discussion of key findings and conclusions. So from what women expressed in interviews, child custody loss is an overlooked source of institutionally orchestrated trauma with layered and persistent impacts on their lives. And this was evidenced in greatly lowered quality of life in terms of women's overall participation in society, employment and education prospects, as well as long-term impacts that women talked about on their mental and physical health, including increased HIV risk behaviors. Also, for women who I interviewed, custody loss was really part of a continuum of social suffering that many of them, beginning with their early lives, leading up to separation and the orchestration of the event itself and their vulnerability in the aftermath, and that the amount of traumatic events from childhood to adulthood was pretty astounding in the sample of women that I interviewed. I think the cumulative impacts of trauma that women described could be sort of better described as them being in a perpetual state of traumatization with all of the cumulative trauma that they described in the interviews. Thirdly, how suffering is lived and felt had significance located in social processes and power structures. And by what I mean by that, so women talked about grief very little and named trauma very rarely. And I think based on other theories around grief and loss, when grief is not socially acknowledged or recognized, it can be called disenfranchised grief. And I think one of the examples with how the women talked about was how the child welfare system played a significant role in normalizing women's feelings of shame and guilt, but marginalizing feelings of grief and trauma by not recognizing those emotions in their interactions with women in the aftermath of separation. And lastly, in terms of research that's needed, there's a lot of research needed to better understand the impacts of this experience on women, especially the longitudinal aspect, impacts over the lifespan. There's also a need to develop research on interventions to encourage parent-led outreach and organizing, reducing social isolation and facilitating information sharing among women, and also to alter institutional processes to address child loss related trauma and parent advocacy needs, and specifically from a trauma-informed care perspective, and also to support community-based alternatives to parent-child separation. And I'm going to just quickly say the next steps for this study. So I'm working now on a social network mapping analysis, looking at all the social connections described by women in the lead-up period and in the aftermath of child custody loss. And the second analysis that I'm working on is on all of the recommendations that women provided that I haven't touched on really in today's talk, all the ideas that they shared on ways that the system could better support families. So, thank you very much for your time.